Good morning and welcome to God Talk. Today I want to talk about the desire for God. I'm coming toward the end, those of you who have been with me, God bless you, of going through a book that I have written called The Heart of Jesus and the Coming Relationship. The bottom line is I am in a heart fusion with the heart of Christ. And I've been seeking to understand what this means. I'm not the first person that this has happened to. As I explain in the book, which is available on Amazon, and today I've gone through my experiences, the Hebrew Bible, the New Testament, different half a dozen of these extraordinary medieval mystical figures who also experience this kind of a heart connection, a heart union with the heart of Christ. And then I've been talking about what it means. And we're at the end, so I want to talk about the desire for God. You'll see why shortly. And then after that, I'm going to talk about what you can do if you're interested in this kind of a relationship. How do you get there? Well, through prayer. So I'm going to talk about different prayer modalities, ways of praying. In fact, on my website, drhalgreen.com, drhalgreen.com, I have a section of podcasts, which now is becoming a book, because I've got 43 of them, of these short podcasts already completed. And the name of the book is going to be Pray Then Like This, which comes from Matthew chapter 6, verse 9 in the RSV version, where Jesus says, pray then like this, just before giving us the great Lord's Prayer. The second title, the subtitled book, will be 3-Minute Prayer Retreats. Short, but sweet. It'll be really how to pray in terms of, first, the mechanics of prayer. What are the things you need to be aware of, like, how do you do it? What do you pray? What about prayer distractions? How does God communicate with you? Then the second section is going to be on breath prayers. How to actually pray simply by focusing on your breath. It's a wonderful, easy way to get into the kind of a prayer condition, prayer state, relational circumstance that I'm talking about in this connection with God. Then the third section is going to be on praying the scriptures. How do you pray the scriptures? I've got a number of scriptures as well as a section on what you do to pray the scriptures. Then after praying the scriptures is going to be prayer poems, both myself and others, and then praying with some of the great prayers of church history. And then finally, there'll be a section on mystical prayer for those who want to continue to go farther into this relationship, who have this desire for God. So let's turn then to the desire for God. And this is a kind of the closing chapter of the book before I have an epilogue on prayer. Well, if you've listened to me, of course, if you've read the book thus far, it likely indicates that you have one degree or another of a desire for God. Wow. I place this subject here rather than earlier in the work because without that priceless desire, you will not move forward toward a union with Christ. This is kind of the whole bottom line thing for me, is the desire for God. Having served 10 churches, around 5,000 people over off and on a 37-year period, that's been an issue for me. Do the parishioners actually desire God? What do you desire when you desire God? How do we recognize the nature of that desire and call it the desire for God? Well, the desire for God is as the air in your tires or the wind in your sails, without which you will not, and in truth cannot, advance forward toward this intimacy with God. And if you even have a modicum, pray to God for greater desire. That's a legitimate prayer. God, like the man said, the father said to Jesus, I believe, help me in my unbelief. Lord, I guess I have a desire for you. Increase my desire. It is the one desire that you cannot have too much of. And if I've made my case sufficiently to you, if you've been listening these last several weeks, then by now, hopefully you will have accepted the possible, if not probable, truth of my central thesis, and here it is. Not only Christian, but human destiny is marital union with God through the heart fusion with the cosmic heart of Christ. That's a heavy statement, I know. Gosh. It's really simple. It's as simple as two magnets forming an electromagnetic field and coming together. And as I've been saying, your heart is a magnet, but you cannot know it until the heart of Christ draws near it, which stirs your heart like magnets attracting to each other. And out of that will come a field of love, a field of spirit, just like the electromagnetic field between actual physical magnets, positive and negative flows of electrons. Not only Christian, but human destiny is marital union with God through fusion, a heart fusion with the cosmic heart of Christ. That's what happened to me. That's what my life and message are about. That is what I believe God has called me to attest to you. Your personal destiny, right along with human destiny, is marriage to union with God. That means sooner or later, you're going to enter into the Trinity. Wow. Call it the relationship. The end or goal of religion is the relationship. That's the end game of all religion, right here. The entrance into the relationship, regardless of whatever prior perspective or tradition you may have come from. There may be many doors into, but only one ultimate and final relationship, the Trinity. Wow. The eternal you, the eternal I, and their eternal we. The lover, the beloved, and the love itself. The giver, the receiver, and the giving itself. It's just so beautiful, so simple, just like romantic love. So the question is, what can you do about this? Well, what do you want to do? As is said, in the beginning is the desire. God desired there to be humanity, or we would not be at all. Now it's up to us to desire the God who desires us. God has given us the absolute freedom to desire or not to desire God. I remember a discussion with an atheist friend. Out of our conversational context, he just blurted out, I don't need there to be a God. He just kind of looked at me, I don't want to say defiantly, but with this, I don't need there to be a God. I looked back and responded with one question. Yeah, but do you want there to be a God? To that, he was silent. He just looked at me with a blank expression as if puzzled about how to take that question. Well, he's never given me an answer, and I have never pushed for one. So what would it be like to actually desire there to be a God? For many, a desire for God would center on hoped for divine benefits. Nothing wrong with that. Like safety, protection, healing, and well-being. Being loved and cared for. not being alone or lonely in this incredible cosmos, eradicating fear and anxiety, gaining a comforting sense of peace, and of course, the attaining of salvation and the cessation of the dread of death. Now, all of these can and do arise along with a communing sense of connection to God. They come about. They're just there. They're like the fruit of the Spirit. But do they constitute the real reason for desiring and seeking God? Is it really about what God can do for you that matters most? What about your actually desiring God for God? Where does that fit in? Well, I've got one of my little prayer poems that I'm going to read, titled, Be Careful What You Pray For. Ask for your blessing. It's to God, so God's going to be to you here. Ask for your blessing, and that is what you may give. But only your blessing. Ask for something from you, and that is what you may give, but only something from you. Those in need of this or that may well get this or that, but only this or that in your time and in your way. But those who seek you, who may stumble in their asking, who may not know how to ask you for you, you who are above all gifts and cravings of this world, these you will bless beyond those who merely ask for your blessing, beyond those who only want something from you. Until we learn to ask you for you, for your presence, your spirit, your love, sufficient beyond our imaginings, we will not understand what is truly important, what our deepest need is finally about, what your blessing can really mean. You are so gentle, so patient, O God. You will give us, when you choose, only what we ask for, but no more, unless in your grace you choose to lead us beyond ourselves. You are yourself the more, so few know or yet desire to ask for. Wow. Does that make sense? Let me read as soon as I find it here from Psalm 73, where the psalmist is asking, how is it that the good suffer and the bad get all this good stuff? Anyhow, God shows them that the end result of evil ones is evil against them. I mean, they're going to get it. That's, wow. So it gives the psalmist peace. Okay, God, you are just. But then here's what, beginning at verse 21 of Psalm 73. Thus my heart was grieved, and I was vexed in my mind. I was so foolish and ignorant. I was like a beast before you. Have you ever been angry at a person only to realize later they had done no wrong, quite the opposite? And you feel really stupid and foolish, like an ignorant beast? Huh. Now, here it is now. It gets very personal. Nevertheless, I am continually with you. You hold me by my right hand. You will guide me with your counsel, and afterward receive me to glory. And these next two verses are among my very favorite personally from the whole Bible. This is from the New King James Version, by the way. Whom have I in heaven but you? And there is nothing upon earth that I desire beside you. My flesh and my heart may fail, but God is the strength of my heart and my portion forever. My flesh and my heart may fail, but God is the strength of my heart and my portion forever. Let's let that sink in as we take a brief weather break. Next, I want to turn to a different psalm. Again, one of my very favorite psalms that speaks my heart. It's about the desire for God. It's Psalm 63. Psalm 63. And imagine what it would be like as I read this to feel the way the psalmist feels. It's a psalm of David, by the way. O God, you are my God. I seek you. My soul thirsts for you. My flesh faints for you. As in a dry and weary land where there is no water, so I have looked upon you in the sanctuary, beholding your power and glory. Because your steadfast love is better than life, my lips will praise you. So I will bless you as long as I live. I will lift up my hands and call on your name. My soul is satisfied as with a rich feast, and my mouth praises you with joyful lips. When I think of you on my bed and meditate on you in the watches of the night, for you have been my help, and in the shadow of your wings I sing for joy. My soul clings to you. Your right hand upholds me. But those who seek to destroy my life shall go down into the depths of the earth. They shall be given over to the power of the sword, that they may be prey for jackals. I'm going to skip some of that because this was added later. The psalm actually ends here at verse 8. You see, many of the psalms had things added that are clearly a very different spirituality, a different modality, a different context and meaning. So it's the first 8 verses of Psalm 63 that speak to what it is I'm addressing now. My soul clings to you. The word cling or cleave is the word for devotion in Hebrew, like Psalm 91, where God says, because, I'll paraphrase it, because you cling to me or cleave to me in love, I will deliver you. That kind of desire for God. Well, let me use the analogy of human marriage. When you seek a life partner, is it primarily for the benefits such a relationship might grant you? Or is it really about finding, quote, the one, unquote, with whom you could truly fall in love and desire to live with the rest of your life? Now, in human marriage, the one, quote, unquote, concerns your partner for this life, since marriage ends at the grave, though love does not. So, you know, if you want to be together, you can be together in heaven, I'm certain of that. Just it'll be different. What about desiring and finding the one, capital for one, with whom to spend your eternal life? I know that's a strange question, but one I must nevertheless ask you, especially in view of what I've been describing throughout the book I've been reading to you and talking about. Are you thinking, I just want to be single in heaven, as are the angels? Well, Jesus, after all, said that in the resurrection we will neither marry nor be given in marriage, but will be just like the angels in heaven, Matthew 22, verse 30. Yet the angels in heaven are in constant connection with God as ever-present members of God's heavenly court. And do you really want to be eternally single? especially if and when you should spot Christ, who you will instantly see and sense is the one true love of your eternal life. Trust me on this. As I've indicated, call me a matchmaker between you and Christ. I am certain about what your reaction will be. I just want you to prepare for it now, to be open to Christ even while in this life, which is only temporary. Your union with Christ will not be temporary. Now, how do I know about this coming attraction? Not only from my own experience, but during my 4 years as a matchmaker, every time I introduced a couple, and I would only introduce the couples at lunchtime so they could go to a safe place and have lunch. Anyway, anytime I introduced a couple and there was a certain kind of chemistry, quote unquote, between them, I could just sense it. They always became an item, and I never had to match them again, whether they just stayed together or they got married, and sometimes I even did marriages. They no longer required my services. That is what will happen to you, I'm telling you, when you encounter the true beloved of your heart, the one, Christ. If your desire is truly God, here's the deal. Nothing except God will be able to satisfy that desire. Let me say that again, because this is going back for a long time. The mystics have understood that. Or as Augustine said, our hearts are restless until they find rest in God. Nothing but God can satisfy the deepest longing of your heart. And it will not dissipate over time. If we are designed by God to hunger and thirst for God, like the psalmist reports, then God must have put that desire in us, even if we are not yet aware of it. As the mystics have long understood, you cannot desire God without God having secretly planted that desire in you as a pure gift, an invitation to seek God. And in addition to receiving the kind of benefits a relationship with God might offer you, as I've just described, what about the pure desire for God as the one for you, the one and only one who will satisfy your heart, the single someone more you covertly seek for your being, who will deliver an undeniable sense of personal completion, of the filling of what's been called your ineffable God hole, which I remember having for so many years, a sense that there was this vast hole in my being. I don't know what would ever fill it. Well, God fills it. Again, trust me on that. You will likely not recognize this ineffable God hole as the ground and basis of your desire and search for God, but I assure you, when at last you behold the face of God, you will realize for all time, I try to turn the page here. Ever had pages stick together? A lot of fun, isn't it? All right. That this one, and this one alone, has the key to unlock your heart and to fit perfectly with your heart in its farthest dreams of fulfillment and consummation. Wow. A lot of love songs were written about that kind of a hoped for, imagined for consummation with something beyond our grasp, but not our hope. Like for me, Somewhere Over the Rainbow. Somewhere Over the Rainbow. Wow. Somewhere there is this someone. In sum, just like any love relationship, you have to desire it, which also indicates a readiness for such a relationship. You know, in Song of Songs, it is said, do not stir up before it's time. Before it's time for you to, you know, or for me, for that matter, when I was younger, to be interested in romantic love, don't worry about it. Don't worry about it. Enjoy your life where you are. And in time, this may reveal itself, show itself, emerge from within you. And once a naked desire of your heart for God has been sensed, you just have to let it loose, as you would permit a horse to leave its stables and run free on green pastures. Here's the deal. Your heart knows the way to God. It is inbuilt, like a bird's instinct to know where to go to spend the winter, even if it has never been there before. Desire knows the way to God. And this has been recognized as far back as Plato, the Greek pagan philosopher in the 4th century BCE. Ask God for greater desire, and then follow your passion and desire all the way to your one true and eternal home, union with the Beloved, whom you will discover you already know and love. You simply have been under a God-induced temporary amnesia, so you could live out the gift of this life. When you finally behold the God who is already beholding you, this will become absolutely clear to you. You will awaken to what has been present all along. It may sound far-fetched, but it's the truth. So let your heart lead you. In its desire is hidden the sure guide God has implanted. Trust that you will meet the God of your desire, though always on God's terms and God's timing. For the love relationship with God that is your destiny is always and only a sheer gift of God, not something ever to be earned or deserved, but rather miraculously granted, due strictly to God's own nature. You know, God is, after all, love. It's all about God's grace. It's not about our earning or deserving this love. It's about the fact that it's there. You know, when you're in love. You can't explain it. It's romantic love is one of the great mysteries, absolute mysteries of life. Like the song, "Ah, sweet mystery of life, at last I found you." Oh, the meaning of it all. I get into these songs, romantic love, which arose in Western civilization out of Christian mystical theology of the union of the soul with God. That's what it's all about. Well, if you would like to hear this show, I will have it on my website today, drhalgreen.com, drhalgreen.com. And I will be turning next time to what you can do about it if you actually find in yourself a desire for God. How do you get there? So I'm going to be talking about ways of prayer. And in the meantime, my friends, have a safe and blessed week. God bless us all.